Welcome, welcome back to another episode of Fire It Up. This is Steve. I'm here to bring you the inside scoop on the mechanics, what's going on in politics in our country today. And man, oh man, has it been a week. As we record this, we've just concluded the public hearings in the impeachment process going on in the House, along with the Democratic debate. Man, there's a lot of stuff to unpack. Want to get right into it. I don't know if you watched or listened to the hearings going on in the House and the impeachment process that we're working our way through, but oh my Lord, the games that were played. So as I look at this, as I watched it and as I listened to it, and I didn't listen to all of it because I have a job and a day and a life, but as I listened to a good portion of it, it reminds me of two groups of people trying to describe an object sitting on a table in front of them, and neither one is really describing it completely. On the Democratic side, they were laying out the case, and the witnesses were corroborating the facts that we know and the things that we didn't know and learned new. Meanwhile, the Republican side of the committee did everything that they could to discount and discredit the process, perhaps because the facts are somewhat irrefutable. Who knows? But, you know, it was just an interesting process to watch. You know, there was, as usual, when you have these kinds of events, there was the usual political grandstanding, the speeches made, not speaking to or necessarily for the defendants who were testifying or the people in the room, but speaking to the American people, the media, and of course the base of their party. And they really, really went after these witnesses. They spent a tremendous amount of time trying to discredit, to minimize, to marginalize the witnesses. And in truth, don't think they did really that good a job. But, you know, we will see what happens. The betting people are that, you know, if impeachment articles come out of the House of Representatives, that the impeachment itself will not come out of the Senate, that the votes aren't there to move forward with impeaching the president. However, the process is still something that we must pay attention to. It outlined what happened. The witnesses were corroborating the information that we already knew, you know, whether it was regards to the phone call or phone calls made, the interference, the pressuring, the leveraging of the Ukrainian government. I mean, there was a whole lot of back and forth between the two sides as to, you know, what happened and really how it came to be that it happened. At the end of the day, you know, while some new information was brought out, mostly, in my opinion, and not being partisan, you know, one way or the other, I try to stay right down the middle. The Democrats did a fairly good job of presenting and justifying their case, while the Republicans left a lot on the table in terms of trying to discredit or, you know, disavow or battle what was being presented as the testimonies proceeded. We will see what happens when this gets through the impeachment committee and goes to the full Judiciary Committee, whose task it is now to write up the report, vote on it, whether or not they recommend out articles of impeachment to the full House, where a vote will be held. And it is expected that the House is going to vote forward articles of impeachment, as the Democrats do hold the majority in that body. However, when it gets to the Senate, there is still some question, but it seems likely that the Republican majority is going to block a recommendation of impeachment for the president along party lines. So we will see what happens, and hopefully, you know, the truth will come out, and, you know, we can see. Of course, the result ultimately will be the elections in 2020, and that also was part of the play, part of the game that was being played by both sides to paint the case as to whether or not the current president needs to be voted out of office or will win re-election. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a segment later on in this show. But I just wanted to make mention that, you know, it was an interesting process. There was a lot of information that was brought out, a lot of details that were speculative, you know, through the Mueller report and on into the controversy surrounding the activities that happened with the newly elected Ukrainian president. All of these things will be addressed out and fleshed out as we go forward. But there was some very, very interesting information that was brought forward. One of the things to note was that in many cases, many of the witnesses actually corroborated what we had already heard, what had already come out of the Mueller report, for example, and what the press and the media has been reporting out about the Ukrainian incident that was corroborated by several of the witnesses, and in some cases, very, very dramatically and very, very, very damaging to the president's case. So we shall see what happens. You know, it's a process. You know, as I've said, this is something that the government does not like to go through. You know, it is a painful process for our country. We are looking, after all, at removing our elected president from office for things that he did wrong. And we will see what transpires and what happens as we go through that. And then on top of that, we had the, what was it, fifth Democratic debate. And, you know, that too was an interesting show. In my opinion, I find the debate process that we are going through both in this election cycle as we did in 2016 to be something of a circus. Just got to put it out there. You've got, you know, now a dozen candidates on the stage, and it's not really a debate. I don't know why they call it a debate. It is, you know, a question and answer period, and the candidates spent as much time throwing barbs at each other as they did in trying to answer the questions that were presented to them. And in my opinion, you know, very few of the answers really, really carried any water. A lot of the comments made were attacks across the platform to, you know, one or more of the other candidates, and a lot of discussion about how the main objective needs to be putting up a candidate that can defeat the existing president. I am of the opinion that the process that candidates for high office in this country, especially the office of president, what they need to be giving to the American people is a solid, cohesive, and complete outline of what they would do if they are elected president. Not speculation, not just plans. They need to talk specifics. They need to talk about what they are going to do, who it's going to impact, how much it's going to cost. Because truth be told, the vast majority of the American people are really interested in what are called kitchen table issues. You know, things like food, shelter, a job, and, you know, other elements, like, especially for, you know, the younger people, the 18 to 35 year olds, and even some older people who have a tremendous amount of debt from college that they are struggling to pay off and still make ends meet. These are the things that our political candidates need to be giving us information on how they intend to handle that. They need to be telling us real solid ways that, you know, they are going to help address the college debt issue, which in this country is a huge factor right now. They need to address very clearly what's going on in the employment sector. Yes, the unemployment rate is at a historic low. However, wages are not keeping pace with the cost of living. There's talk around the country. There are states that are putting in place revisions to the minimum wage, you know, in terms of bringing it up as high as $15 an hour. And that's important. That's something that we need to be communicating to our elected officials and to our candidates. That is a very key issue for us. They need to be telling us what they are going to do to help the American people make ends meet, to help us get through day to day, not so that we're living just paycheck to paycheck if we're lucky. You know, many of us are not even in a position where we can make the ends look at each other, never mind make them meet. You know, the other issues that I mentioned, you know, housing in this country, we have a huge number of people who are homeless, including, and very importantly, and something that should not be lost, we have a large number of veterans who are actually homeless. Now, these are people that have gone out, that have served our country, that have answered the call to duty, have taken and sacrificed, you know, their time, their blood, in some cases, their families and everything to defend our country. And when they come back home, they don't have a place to live. That's not right. That's something that we need to address, that we need to get our political leadership, our elected officials, from the federal level all the way down to the state level. We need to be addressing that, and we need to be addressing it hard. You know, the other item, you know, that's one of these so-called kitchen table issues, you know, is food. You know, it's the quality of food, the cost of food, you know, the fact that, you know, millions of children in our country, in the United States of America, the most powerful, richest country on the planet, we have millions of children that go to bed hungry every night for lack of food. And, you know, again, not hearing a whole lot of conversation about that other than, you know, I think it's terrible and this candidate hasn't addressed it and that candidate doesn't have a cohesive plan. We need a unified plan coming out of our political parties. And I don't care whether it's Democrat or Republican. They need to be addressing the fundamental needs of the people of our country, not the needs of the, you know, the elite, not the needs of the one percenters. We need to be addressing the 90% of this country that is struggling to keep ahead of the bills, keep their head above water, to make daily progress and move forward. So, you know, this is something that, you know, as citizens, as voters, we need to be making sure that we are communicating our desires and our needs to our elected officials at every level of government, that this is something we want them to address. It's vitally important. It's just can't say it any plainer than that. They need to stop talking all this crap about which candidate didn't do this or which candidate, you know, is tied to that and all of this BS, and deal with the basic everyday issues that our country faces. That's the key. That's what needs to happen. You know, as the world looks at the United States of America, they see a country deeply divided. They see a country totally polarized and in many cases paralyzed by these binary yes, no, one, zero issues that have, you know, one side arguing against the other side and calling the other side names, and the other side is, you know, trying to obscure what the real facts are. So, you know, at the end of the day, our current process is a game. And it's a game that we are watching being played out with us as the pawn pieces on the board. And this has got to stop. We've got to hold our elected officials 100% accountable. I saw some statistics that says there are, you know, around 180 bills of legislation sitting in the Senate that have been duly passed by the House in bipartisan manner, no less, that are not being brought to the floor because of political gamesmanship. And that is unacceptable. And we have to let our elected officials know that it is unacceptable for policies, for laws that could help the people of this country to sit in one house of our government simply because it is, in their opinion, politically unpopular with their base. And again, this is not a Democrat thing. This is not a Republican thing, because we had the same situation in prior administrations. It is something that's been going on in our country for decades, and it needs to stop. And we have got to make them stop. So, you know, that I guess is my rant to open up the show. But I really, really am you know, strongly engaged and strongly concerned with how much our leaders are playing us for a game. So, you know, that being said, we'll switch gears a little bit. Want to talk in a related way, because I talk on this show, one of the key features and one of my calls to action every week is to become more politically active. And want to talk a little bit about just how we make that happen. And some points in my research that I found, and some things that can be done. I just want to go through them. So again, keeping with the concept that all politics is local politics, as I've said, you know, we need to be addressing at the local level and at the federal level too. But we need to know, first of all, if you're going to become more politically active, your first step is to find out and learn who your local legislatures and politicians are. Who is it that represents you in your state house and your state senate? You know, who's your governor? Who are your local town officials? Who's your mayor? Who is on your city council? Who's on the school board? And, you know, once you find out who they are, you need to find out and find the way to get in touch with them and to actually make them listen. Letters, you know, are effective, but even more effective is physical phone calls, is using social media, is tweeting them. Most, if not all, probably 99.9% of the politicians are on Twitter. And you can hammer them on Twitter over and over again and get your message to them. Identify an issue that you care about. If you are concerned about what the schools are teaching, then you need to get engaged with your school board. Your school board is an elected body. They are sent to work by your local residents, by your neighbors, and by you. And they are, like every other politician, answerable to the constituents. So if you have an issue, if they are not teaching enough math, enough science, if there needs to be more physical education happening, more music, more culture, more art, then you need to be voicing your message at the school board meetings. Every school board meeting, you need to be raising the question about, what are you doing about the lack of math teaching going on in our schools? Or what are you doing about the lack of physical education or the elimination of after-school art programs or after-school programs in general? You know, so identify that issue and, you know, bring it to the elected body that handles it. If, you know, you're concerned about the fact they're tearing down houses, making way for office buildings or other, you know, non-residential, and not replacing them with affordable housing for people to live in, then again, you need to be seeing your city council. You need to be voicing your opinion. They listen when you're in their face. You know, another one is in the same vein. Attend your town hall meetings. Attend your city hall, your city board meetings. Listen to what they're talking about. Do your homework. Do your diligence. If it's something that you don't agree with, let them know. Gather your facts. Make sure that your arguments are substantiated by facts. That is key. You know, you can also get involved more with your local PTA. They are also an action group in the school systems that are geared and targeted toward improving the education our children are getting. You know, you can get out and organize, you know, rallies and events. You know, in today's realm of social media, you know, you can build a flash mob on an issue with a moment's notice. Just, you know, put it out there, communicate it, get it to be repeated, and get people out in the streets making your opinions known. You can use that to mobilize people to support the causes that you care about. You know, as I said, if you're all about the education that our children are receiving, then, you know, you can use social media to galvanize your local community into making that happen. You know, it's all about what you can do. You can register to, you know, be a part of the governing body for your political party locally. All political parties have committees. They are looking for people to help out, not just help out with voting, but help out with the day-to-day running of the organization. So you can get engaged with that. There is a whole range of things you can do. Most importantly, you can, you know, also volunteer as to be part of the election process. Volunteer to work in the polling place to make sure that our voting laws are being upheld 100%. You know, volunteer to register voters. And then, of course, goes without saying, vote. You know, get out there, make sure that on election day, and you've heard me say it in the call to action segments, you know, get out there and get your vote in. Register, verify, go vote. And the other thing you can do this, you know, one-on-one, you can do it in small groups, you can do it at your church, at your social organizations, you can do it over social media, is share what you learn. If you learn that, you know, your school board is taking up a controversial issue, if you learn that the city council is making a decision that's going to impact, you know, local residents, then share that knowledge. Get it out to your circles. You know, communicate it out in your Twitter feed. Put it on your Facebook page. Get it out on Instagram and Snapchat and all of the social media platforms. Get that message out there. You need to be engaged and you need to be active. And additionally, support these organizations. You know, donate your time, donate your resources, donate money. Help these organizations who are working on your behalf to do a better job of it. You know, give them what they need in order for them to better help you. So, you know, don't just sit on the internet and surf and look at happy cat pictures and all of that. Use that tool. The internet is a powerful device. It is a tool that can be used, as we have seen over the last, you know, 10 years. The movements that have been started from, you know, from zero and by using social media have built millions and millions of followers for causes all around the country and all over the world. This is how we get engaged. This is how we take woke to the next level. This is how we create action, by using all of the tools that we have available and making sure that we are getting out there and getting that job done. So, all right, with that being said, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side of the music, we're going to get into more about the game that's being played by our politicians, both federal, state, and local. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Fire It Up. My name is Steve. Stick around. We got a lot more to cover.
Ain't living, no, 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 no. question. No chance to increase finance. Bills pile up sky high. Send that boy off to die. Everybody thinks we're all the mother. Who are they to judge us?
Mother, mother.
Simply call us, we wear our hair long.
Mother, mother.
And we're back. Thank you for staying with us. This is Steve, and you're listening to the Fire It Up show here on WJMS Radio. And we're going to move right along and talk some more about the game that is politics in the United States of America today. A couple of points. You know, one of the things you may have heard from time to time is discussions about issue politics. What exactly is that? Well, issue politics is where a political issue, you know, a concern of, you know, part of the country or a concern of one of the parties actually drives what happens in the election process in galvanizing voter turnout, for example. In previous elections over the years, one of the issue politic items that has been used frequently is the issue of abortion. Now, whether you're pro-choice, pro-life, it is not part of this discussion. What I am saying is that the issue itself draws out, you know, members and people in the respective bases of the political parties in larger numbers than they would just for the election themselves. This tactic has been used in, you know, many states over the years, but particularly in what are called swing states. And swing states are states where the electorate is, you know, so evenly balanced that it literally changes from one party to another over the course of a single or, you know, election cycle or an election, presidential election cycle and the midterm. States will actually change what they are represented as, either from being a Democratic state or a Republican state. If we look at the map, a recent map of where we stand in terms of the Electoral College, right now, Republicans, with no action taken, if the election were held today, Republicans could expect to garner 143 electoral votes. The Democrats could expect to get 224. And there's 171 electoral votes that are in so-called toss-up states. And it's these states, and if you pay attention to it, you will see this. It's these states that are going to be where the political parties are going to focus their attention to work at getting their particular base out to try and swing those states to their side of the aisle. Right now, looks like there are perhaps as many as 10 of these swing states that exist, and you know they include Arizona, Texas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, and a good chunk of Maine. Side note on Maine, Maine is one of the two states that doesn't give all of the electoral votes to the numerical winner of the election in that state. That is, if, you know, 80% of the electorate chose the Republican and 20% chose the Democrat, then, you know, 80% of the delegates would vote for a Republican candidate and 20% would vote for a Democratic candidate. Same thing in Nebraska. And those are the only two states that do that. So these states, these so-called swing states, are where, you know, much of the attention, and if you look at the news and if you're following, you know, the Democratic and the Republican primary process, these states are already in play. These states are where the campaigns are focusing a lot of their attention, where they are focusing a lot of their dollars, because they want to influence those states to move to their side of the column. Now, that can be a powerful feature because it means that they are closely paying attention to what is being talked about, to the voice of the people in those states. And we can play that to our advantage. You know, if we can get our message to the candidates in those states consistently and strongly and in sufficient numbers, we can actually influence what those political parties are going to focus on in those states. So, you know, there are advantages to, you know, being aware of what the swing states are in this country, because in real sense, they are going to determine who is going to become the next president of the United States, who is going to control the federal Senate and the House of Representatives, and even on down into the local tickets, who are going to be the governors, who are going to be the state senators, the state representatives, and so forth. So, you know, if your state is one of those 10 I listed, Arizona, Texas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, and Maine, you know, your job is to get out there and get your message, get your opinion, and those of people, you know, in your circles, as I talked about in the first segment, in your circles that think the way you do, get them out there and get them, you know, engaged so that we get the message to our political candidates on what we want, you know, the country to focus on. So that being said, you know, it is critical that we get that message out there. And, you know, it's part of the game. But let's take a look at this game. And in prior episodes, you know, I introduced some of the elements that form the foundation of this game. You know, we've talked about this thing called the Southern Strategy, which is a 50-plus year plan to consolidate Republican power at the state levels and at the national levels through a strategized method of locking up districts and using gerrymandering to create districts that become bulletproof for the Republican candidates. Now, Democrats have done this as well. This is not a one side being done, not being done by the other. But currently, the Republicans are in control of this process, and it's a fundamental element of this political game that's being played. Additionally, there have been, you know, multiple attacks on voter registration through voter suppression, through all kinds of methods of trying to minimize the vote that can be cast by the opposition. Remember, and you know, I talked about this in a prior segment, Democrats in this country outnumber Republicans 40% to 29%, with independents being 21%. So, you know, this game strategy is to reduce the number of Democratic voters, to maximize the number of Republicans, and to gather as many independent voters as they can to make up the majority. And if we look back at the 2016 election, this is exactly what was done in order to garner the victory for the current president through the Electoral College, even though his political opponent actually won more popular votes. So, you know, you start to string these beads together, and you get the sense of how this game is played, how deeply it's played, and how seriously it's played. When you add in some of the things that are being done to restrict the vote, like purging voter rolls of people who have not voted in the last X number of election cycles, you begin to see that, you know, this is a consolidated strategy. It is something that is insidious in its effect of, you know, reducing the number of people who will be able to vote one way or the other in upcoming elections. And it's a long-term strategy. You know, the architects of this Southern Strategy and these other elements that we've talked about really have been thinking about a long game, not a short, you know, one or two election cycle. You know, this has been going on for 50 years, and it's going to take a long time to reverse it, you know, it's to stop it and to turn it around and to reverse the effects. And not, you know, I'm not advocating that, you know, we got to change it from a Republican strategy to a Democrat strategy. I'm advocating that we need to bring it back to somewhere where the majority of people in our country are adequately and effectively represented, which is not what is the current case. Both parties are playing to their base, and you need look no further than this week's impeachment hearings, as I discussed at the top of the segment, to see how that game is played. As I said, you've got two sides trying to define an object sitting right in front of them on a table. You know, let's say it's an orange. One side says, that's an orange. The other side says, no, it's a Volkswagen. You know, and the arguments go back and forth for each side to prove their case, rather than just a simple statement of facts, a simple statement of, you know, consequences and what it means to the everyday man, woman, and child in this country. You know, it's interesting. I'm an avid news junkie, as you might suspect, hosting this show and, you know, needing to do my research and be informed. And I listen to a broad spectrum of media. You know, the mainstream sources I listen to. I also listen to some of the more controversial sources. You know, I listen to as broad a spectrum of news and information as I can in order to help me identify where the facts are and what I need to research, both for my own education and also to produce and present this show each week. And I had to laugh because I got an ad online and also on the radio where the pitch was giving me the, quote, news I need to know. And I had to stop for a second and go, wait a minute. News that I need to know, you're going to tell me. I think that is a piece of what, you know, we are suffering from in this country, is that we are allowing others to dictate the scope and direction of the information we receive. And, you know, to a certain extent, I'm probably as guilty of that as everyone else. I mean, no one can completely remove their own personal biases from what they discuss. I try to keep it in the middle, but, you know, I have my druthers, I have my biases and my perspectives, and sometimes they creep in. But, you know, I actively try and be as down the middle as I can. But it just struck me as funny that we are in a world now where the facts, the raw, plain, unadulterated facts, are no longer enough. We have to be told what news, what information, what facts we, quote, need, close quote, to know. And I just, you know, it kind of wrinkled me a little bit. And, you know, just goes back to what I said about being informed, doing your diligence, doing your homework, figuring out where the facts are for you, and then, you know, operating effectively based on that. Not letting, you know, a media source or a, you know, a radio source or any of those tell you what news you need to know. So I just wanted to divert onto that for a second because I found it funny. One other thing I wanted to clarify out of the first segment, and we were talking about the power of, you know, the president to appoint judges. And I just wanted to make mention, and I don't know if I did in the first segment, that, you know, the president can appoint, you know, there are 9 Supreme Court justices. There are 179 Court of Appeals. There are 677 federal district court judges. There's 9 Court of International Trade judges. You know, so there's, you know, there's a bankruptcy court judicial system that judges get appointed to, and there are 350 of them. And there are federal magistrates, which are, you know, the local federal justice representatives, and there are 579 of those judges. So among the powers of the presidency is the most powerful tool to shape, you know, legal direction in this country, and that's through the appointing of judges. Now, an interesting thing, and, you know, this pops up in news sources around the horn from time to time, but most recently, that the current administration has appointed at least a half a dozen federal level judges, that's Court of Appeals and Federal District Court judges, who have basically no practical experience in being a judge and were actually universally rated as unfavorable by the American Bar Association. Now, okay, you know, the interesting thing is, out of all of the justices, all the courts that I named in that count, the bankruptcy court and the federal magistrates are the only judges that are required to be attorneys. The rest of the judges can be from whatever walk of life is out there. Those are the only two categories in which a practicing attorney is the only allowed candidate, which, you know, is interesting because those two levels, and smart if you think about it, bankruptcy and the federal magistrate, which handle a lot of, basic level, local issues involving the federal judicial system, are most forward-facing to the citizens of the country. You know, they can have the biggest impact on, you know, citizen finances and business and, you know, day-to-day legal issues. So you found that to be interesting. However, when you take into account, you know, as I said, you know, start to string these beads together, and you look at the fact that the Republicans currently at the federal level control the Senate, which means they control the committees of the Senate, one of which is the Judiciary Committee, which is tasked with, you know, nominating, vetting, and recommending judges at the levels I've mentioned to the full Senate for confirmation. So how, you might ask, does someone who has no judicial experience get through? It's because they have a political background that favors, you know, the current group in control of the Senate, i.e. the Republicans. You know, in Democratic times, you know, when the Democrats control the Senate, judges that are appointed will more reflect, you know, the Democratic way of thinking and so forth. So this is another piece of, you know, the game of politics that is played. Rather than picking, you know, the best candidate regardless of their political background. And I'm not saying that that's not done. You know, there are Democratic, you know, judges that have been appointed in Republican-controlled, you know, Senates, both current and in past, you know, years. So I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, but, you know, we need to make sure that we're communicating with our elected officials to let them know that we want it to be the norm and not the outlier. So, you know, again, we got to get engaged. We got to do our homework. We got to listen to a broad breadth of, you know, sources for our information, boil it all down, pull out the nuggets that are facts in that, and then, you know, make our own decisions as to how we want our government to work. You know, and so getting back to, you know, this two sides trying to define the middle. If you listen to, you know, various, you know, legislators and pundits and, you know, all of the talking heads out there that provide all of the spin on, you know, the news we hear, you know, you can, if you listen now with a more seasoned, a more, you know, introspective, or maybe not introspective, a more educated ear, you can hear how this the psychology of this game is being played on us. You know, you can, you know, you actually need to look no further than the tweet account of the current president to see the most glaring examples of how this works. You know, here's a fact, here's my definition of the fact, and that gets repeated out through the cycles. If you look and follow the dialogue, you will see that theme travel around and out through the media streams, and that's how it becomes embedded in the mainstream thinking of what goes on in the country. So, you know, it all goes back, as we come in and kind of wind down this segment and get ready for our call to action segment, it all comes down to, again, being informed, being educated, doing your diligence and your homework, and communicating to your elected officials from the local level all the way up to the top what you want them to do. Because after all, we put them there. They work for us. They don't work for a political party. They work for the people of the United States. So we'll close to that note. When we come back after the break, we'll do our call to action segment. You're listening to Fire It Up. My name's Steve. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
What are we even fighting for? que es que nace un campeón.
I'll fight for my country, you fight for your country. Ooh. We see the victory, they'll get the victory. Ooh. Man to man and heart to heart, face to face, but worlds apart.
Face to face.
You and I, we're champions, we're champions, we're champions. Whoa. You fight for my country, I'll fight for your country.
Welcome back to Fired Up. This is Steve, and now we're in our call to action segment. As you know, as we do each week, we include action items that you can do in order to, you know, move yourself and your community into getting, you know, what we need our political leadership to accomplish for us. Because remember, they work for us. So the first thing I want to bring out is really a subset of prior call to actions, and I really want to kind of focus a little bit on this concept of being informed, of doing your research, doing your homework, doing your diligence in order to find out the facts and the truth. I was doing some research and really was kind of figuring out a way to answer the question of how do you engage in discussion with someone who, you know, can see a fact and yet come back and argue, you know, counter to that, you know, argue again that, you know, the orange is really a Volkswagen. And I came across something interesting and a little bit shocking. If you do your research and check into the flat earth theory, you'll find some interesting information there, and that even in, you know, 2019 going into 2020, there is a significant number of people who believe, wait for it, that the world is flat. Now, this was a common belief back as far as, you know, 240 BC, that, you know, the earth was in fact a flat disk, and if you sailed off in any one direction at some point, you would sail off the end of the earth into oblivion, never to be seen again. That theory was scientifically disproved, 2,400 years ago. But yet, a recent poll shows that one-third of Americans between the ages of 18 and 24 believe that the Earth is not round. Now, you can argue, debate it back and forth, but I cite the example to make you aware of the kind of diligence you need to do, the kind of research. Go find the facts, form your own opinion, get yourself educated so that you can engage and make, you know, smart decisions for you, not based on what someone else tells you. So our first call to action is really going to be, again, a restatement of you have to do your own homework. You have to do your own diligence. Listen to more than just one or two, you know, mainstream media sources and, you know, various, you know, social media platforms. Dig further, dig deeper, dig wider. Go out, find the information, research it, look at both sides, read the arguments, understand them, so that you can make an informed decision when you go to vote and you're talking with your candidates and you're talking with your elected officials, and make that informed vote as to what you want them to do for you. Because remember, we choose them. It's not the other way around. The second call to action really is, again, the reprisal of our standing theme for this year, and that is make sure you have done, are doing, or will do everything that you need to do in order to cast your vote in the upcoming elections. And I say elections plural because not only is the election in November 2020 vitally important, but depending on which state you live in, there are a number of interim elections that will happen, whether it's to replace a seat that was filled, you know, by a candidate who moved up to another political position, or, you know, is deceased, and, you know, whatever. But there will be additional elections held in your area over the course of the year, and you need to engage in those just as much as you need to engage at the national level. You know, it is, again, all part of doing that diligence. It's all part of, you know, being woke and taking that to the next step of being engaged in action. So, you know, that being said, you know, we've talked about these points over the course of our shows. We will continue to talk about them. And I'm really, really interested, and I guess we'll make this our third call to action for this segment. I'm really interested to hear what you think. You know, you can reach out to us. You can follow us on Twitter at @RUFiredUp. That's A-R-E, the letter U, fired up, one word. And that's on Twitter. You can email at firedupradio, again, all one word, at yahoo.com. And you can, you know, follow us on Facebook @RUFiredUp. And, you know, engage with us. I will be posting articles and links that we discuss over the course of the shows. I will be, you know, posting, you know, various graphics and diagrams that I mention on the show. It's a good place for you to start to get some additional information, to do your own research, to find your own facts, and, you know, become an informed and educated voter. So, big show this week. We're looking forward to some interesting things coming in the weeks to come. I appreciate your tuning in, as always. If you have any comments or questions, please reach out, you know, through social media, and I'll be more than happy to answer any questions. That will do it for this episode of Fired Up. My name is Steve. We'll see you again next week. Please join in. Thank you, and in the interim, have a happy and safe holiday season.